Ms. Tate, good morning to you. You may approach.
My name is Cindy Tate. I am one of the assistant public defenders from Douglas County under the employ of Thomas Riley. And I am here as the attorney for the appellant, Gregory Duncan. Mr. Duncan, we are here on appeal after his conviction of assault in the third degree with a conviction as well under the hate crime enhancement. I'm going to suggest and maybe take a leap of faith here that I was not called here to argue about couple of the arguments that were contained in our brief. One was the excessive sentence, and the other one was ineffective assistance of counsel. I believe I'm here before your honors this morning to touch upon a matter which is one of first impression, which is how much bias is required to satisfy a causation element in our hate crime statute. We're here today because we believe that the evidence was insufficient to support a conviction under the hate crime enhancement in this case, and that no reasonable jury could have found Mr. Duncan guilty under the facts of this case, guilty of that hate crime enhancement.
Was the jury given an instruction to guide them on the causation issue, and was one requested by either party?
One was requested.
A causation instruction?
There was conversations contained within the transcript. There was conversations by counsel at that time with respect to causation. The court did its own research and found that she believed there was nothing in Nebraska's precedent. She felt that there were other jurisdictions and that Nebraska's law was more in line with a substantial factor type of causation. But in reviewing the jury instructions upon appeal, it doesn't appear that that issue was specifically set forth in jury instructions, which is part and parcel why I'm here.
And to return to the question that you were first asked, nobody requested such an instruction, correct?
I don't believe an instruction was requested. I think that I know that there was an instruction or requested with regards, well, there was discussion held on that the state was not going to weigh in on the discussion about whether it was a substantial factor or should be a but-for factor. There might have been a concession, and that might have been another issue with respects to ineffective assistance of counsel. There was discussion with regards to the term sexual orientation and the fact that it was...
Let me back up a step. The implication of your argument seems to be that as counsel and the court are chatting, that somehow constitutes a request for instruction. My understanding has always been you put it in writing, you submit it to the court and say, I want this. That's a request. Nothing less than that, correct?
Correct.
And nobody did that.
Counsel for the appellant did not do that, Your Honor.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. What I believe we're here today is to provide some direction for our courts, because there is no direction.
So if you get by the instruction or the absence of a request for instruction, what are you asking this court to adopt? A but-for?
I am asking this court to adopt a but-for standard to conform with our burden of proof.
Well, so how does that work in the context of this case and the evidence that was presented?
But in the context of this case, the evidence, as it would in this case, the facts are that this was Halloween weekend, that the individual who was cross-dressing was not the victim in this case. It was an associate who was with the victim who, by the evidence, was heterosexual.
But does the statute have language because of an association with?
It does have because of an association, but I think that the evidence in this case was severely lacking. There was no evidence presented with regards to, and I think we're starting to kind of morph into where I wanted to go with this. What we have right now is a statute that is requiring us to delve into a defendant's motive. And we've never done that before. In fact, in criminal law, we're not required to produce a motive. The state never has to get up and say why somebody did what they did. They only have to prove.
The hate crime motive would be clearly an important element, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And the specific
so
facts of
why
this...
Why did your defendant hit this person?
The evidence that was presented at trial is he felt that he was acting in defense of his friend who was actually having the confrontation with the victim.
That's a question for the jury.
Absolutely, and we're saying that that was insufficient and that there was no, that the evidence as presented was insufficient and that there was no directive given to this jury to help define because of or sexual orientation to maybe provide them that direction.
What was the state's evidence of what occurred or their theory of what occurred?
Their theory of the case was is that somehow the words that were, depending on what was said and what was in the mind or the motive of the defendant's friend, that that was somehow hate based upon the implied sexual orientation of someone who was dressed as a woman on Halloween weekend.
Well, there was evidence, if believed, that an epithet was used on at least two occasions directed at someone who is either homosexual or associating with a homosexual. Correct?
Yes. Yes.
Viewing the evidence in the light most favorably to the state.
Correct.
Why doesn't that pass the test, whether it's a, even assuming it's a because of test, isn't that enough?
No.
Why
You're
not?
Imparting the motives in the words of another individual upon this defendant who was convicted of this crime. That individual did not stand before this jury. Mr. Duncan uttered no words prior to one punch. No words, no motive. He got up on the stand and told you there was a confrontation between the victim, who he did not know, and his friend, and he felt that he was acting in defense of his friend.
I want to understand the contours of your argument. Assuming we have a similar situation and the person who threw the punch doesn't say anything, but one of his associates is standing behind him saying, hit him, he's supporting this, I'm not going to use the word, but you know what I'm saying.
Correct, yes.
You're not going to tell me that we would say that's not, doesn't meet the test, does it?
No. Depending on what test you end up adopting here, it may or may not, but that's the question that we've got here, is we don't have a test and we don't have a standard.
What is the test that you think is required of the statute?
I think what we believe is required of the statute, Your Honor, is a but-for, the sole cause of the underlying criminal act is in support of whether it's sexual orientation, race.
Well, but-for and sole cause are two different things. I mean, but-for, proximate cause, it could be a concurrent cause and still meet the but-for test, correct?
I think that other jurisdictions have kind of separated out a but-for and a proximate cause test, and I think that when you start talking about a proximate cause, you're then delving into an area of mathematical considerations. When I looked at some of the other states and jurisdictions that have weighed out this standard, and you've got Iowa who's looking at and applying a mathematical aspect, so I'm kind of akin to what we do in civil court. But then you're starting to, you know, how much has got to, does it have to be, you know, a contributing factor, a substantial factor, or just in the mix?
But what's your answer?
My answer is that it needs to be the primary motive. That's what we're trying to protect.
So you are offering that the proper law would be a continuum of causation.
Yes. Yes.
Are you attacking the constitutionality of the statute in any way?
No. No. I'm simply stating that as in Nebraska at this time, we don't have a standard upon review, and the trial courts are left to their discretion. What was lacking in the record of this is that the trial court did do its own research but failed to cite any cases from other jurisdictions in reaching her evaluation that it should be a substantial factor.
And how does a substantial factor differ from a factor in a continuum of causation, which you say is the appropriate measure?
That,
I'm not clear what you want.
Well, okay, maybe I should backtrack here. I want the courts to say,
but for the fact, and maybe I got confused and my apologies, but for the fact that of this gentleman's sexual orientation, which even by the facts of this case was called into question, it was in evidence that a heterosexual man can dress as a female. And does this make this a hate crime?
Before you have to sit down, the jury instruction that was requested that's assigned as error, is that the statement of law?
The jury instruction, are you speaking with regards to the causation standard or the definition of sexual orientation?
The definition of sexual orientation. Is that a statement of law? And if it is it an accurate statement of law?
We have, here in Nebraska, have not defined that. I believe it was a compilation, something that was argued by trial counsel, was a compilation of, there's a lot to be learned in reading transcripts from trials about making records. From what I gleaned from the transcript is he was trying to morph a proposed jury instruction and a definition that combined a Webster's Dictionary definition and then put some legalese into it.
But there's no, there was no expert testimony offered about sexual orientation and categories of sexual orientation or anything.
There was none of that was offered in conjunction with arguing for this specific jury instruction, which I think plays right into the hand of the confusion of, we don't have a definition on books that was given to a jury. We will still, to this day, in my last homicide trial, we will send a jury instruction back on bodily injury, intention, knowing, but the court to find in this case that there is sexual orientation is just a common knowledge type of definition, I think is a stretch, especially when we're venturing
what
into
would
new
you,
areas.
What would, how would that be solved at the trial level?
At the trial level, I think it could be solved. Well, I think we need to adopt, whether it's in the form of case law or by statute, we need to define sexual orientation.
Are we wanting expert testimony? Are we wanting an expert to educate us on sexual orientation? Is it binary? Is it a continuum? Do we need somebody to come in and bring us up to date?
We might. I think it's an ever-changing ever-changing aspect of it, especially when we're talking about the fact that the facts of this case on the periphery was someone who was dressed as a woman and not necessarily to the outside world was covered under the hate crime statute of being homosexual, heterosexual. I mean, there's no way to tell that just based off of on Halloween week and the way that somebody was dressed. We may have to bring in someone. My job is to try the cases and to apply the law and the law that we have there and to maybe get creative sometimes with the wording and the fashioning of jury instructions. And a lot of times we look to you folks to help us in that fashion. And I think that the court in this case was definitely looking for some guidance, and she tried her best, went outside the confines of this jurisdiction, and decided that sexual orientation is just something we can let people decide for themselves.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Liss, good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Please, the Court, Nathan Liss, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the Appalachian State of Nebraska. I said, well, I will focus on the insufficiency of the evidence in the proposed jury instruction on sexual orientation. I think after prior discussion, I'll start with sufficiency of the evidence. The State maintains that the evidence was sufficient to find Mr. Duncan guilty of assaulting the victim because of his sexual orientation or because of his association with someone because of a certain sexual orientation. As far as Duncan's assertion that the district court misinterpreted the meaning of because for purposes of 28-111, we disagree. I guess as an initial matter, I wasn't going to argue that this issue was not properly before you, but in light of some of the prior questions, I guess this court could conclude that the district court's rationale was merely in the context of a recent verdict. No jury instruction was requested on that issue, and there's no assignment of error with respect to the denial or failure to give a jury instruction on that issue. So you could conclude it's not before you.
There is no proximate cause instruction in this set of jury instructions, correct?
Correct.
So how was the jury to determine what level of causation or how the causation worked in connection with these, the elements that they were instructed upon?
Well, the jury was instructed just using the language of the statute, just because of language, and I guess I would submit that in this case, that was enough because any rational juror would understand the meaning of because of. They wouldn't have needed an additional proximate cause causation type of
argument. What did the information charge? What did the information charge specifically?
It said because of the assault of the victim, because of his sexual orientation or his association with persons of a certain sexual orientation.
So that really is a question to the jury as to why the defendant did what he did.
I'm sorry.
It's really a question for the jury to determine why the defendant acted in the manner that he did.
Yeah.
Okay, what is the strongest evidence that he acted as a quarry because of that, because of the victim's association with this protected group? What is your strongest evidence? There wasn't any conversation between the victim and the defendant regarding the issue of the sexual orientation. Is that correct?
Correct.
So, are you relying on what happened in the restaurant or wherever the discussions with the other parties occurred?
Well, my response would be it's a combination of both the state's evidence and the fact that the jury specifically heard and rejected the defendant's testimony that I didn't know any of these people were gay or anyone in the victim's room or group was gay. I just simply stepped up and punched this guy to defend my buddy. They heard and specifically rejected that they were instructed on that and rejected it. So,
did the defendant deny that he heard any of this conversation that was going on?
Yeah, he said he didn't hear any of it. He testified to that effect.
And he was in position to have heard it.
And was standing directly behind his friend.
So what if they were in the restaurant and he was in a booth 10, 15 feet away, and then they walk out, and then he punches him? The heterosexual victim. So is there any evidence of hate there?
If that was it?
Yeah.
Well, no. I mean, I think if that were the extent of the evidence, that the evidence would be insufficient. I mean, unless there would be something else there to draw the inference that the assault occurred because of sexual orientation, it seems to me that's pretty thin. But when we look at this case, I mean, you've got them looking and laughing at him in the restaurant when Jacob and Joshua are leaving. They hear derogatory comments such as fag being made coming from Duncan's stable. When they get outside, Adriana comes up to the group and calls them queer and faggots, and then looks back to his group and says, should I? Duncan and Morrison are laughing. After that,
what's the inference from should I? What's inference from should I hit him?
I don't know. I mean, should I hit him? Should I do something? I mean, something. It means something. You know, just say should I, meaning nothing.
And then somebody else, the defendant, comes up and does hit him.
Well, right, and there's further comments made even before that. Then, as Jacob says, I know I'm just a boy in a dress, Adriano says, yeah, you're fucking disgusting. And then again, Ryan steps in and tries to defuse the whole thing. And Adriano again calls him faggots and says, come on, you fucking pussy. And at that point, Doug steps up his right behind him and punches him. I mean, I think, given the context of the evidence...
Duncan basically said nothing.
What's that?
Duncan did not say anything that you know.
He did, but when we look at
it... So he can testify, I didn't hear it, and I didn't say anything, and he could be disbelieved.
And that's exactly what happened. And when you look at the fact that they heard or instructed on and rejected his defense, there was nothing left but the state's evidence, and the state's sole theory in this case was that it was based on sexual orientation. So, and we submit the evidence was sufficient on the because issue. We would simply argue if you do get to the issue that the district court was not incorrect, I think that's a legitimate interpretation of because it's a substantial factor rather than a but-for.
Do we have to adopt some definition standard, but-for or substantial? And if we do, what is your recommendation?
I don't know if you have to. I guess the issue is, will there be some potential confusion in future cases if you don't? I don't know. I mean, generally speaking, the language of the statute is sufficient alone.
But for is the appropriate test, isn't it?
Well, the majority of courts I've found that have addressed the meaning of because in criminal cases, both state and federal courts, have found that it's not but for, it's a motivating factor. So majority of courts I've seen are not applying but for, they're not saying it's but for.
That'd be the third reason then, or the third test, not sole reason or but for, but substantially because the person associated with a particular sexual orientation.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the three options are but for, a motivating factor, a substantial motivating factor, or just nothing. You just go with the language of the statute. I guess just to take a position, we would submit that either the language of the statute or the motivating factor that would be appropriate. But in any event, if this court concludes that but for is the appropriate test, we would again submit that the evidence in this case was sufficient. Given that once they rejected his defense, the jury necessarily found that the state's evidence and the state's theory was the but-for cause of the assault in this case. They did clearly would have
been. Well, what was the answer to the question, should we adopt one of these reasons in this case? Or one of these theories?
Well, I think you should address the issue and at least explain whether or not we need to go further, whether or not the language of the statute alone is sufficient. And then, if we need more, for clarification purposes or otherwise, then yes, I think we should do it so that we don't have problems in future cases and the trial courts don't know where they stand. And that's probably the safest route in this case, because I think the argument, admittedly, the argument is going to come up again if we don't clarify the issue.
So if it's the language of the statute, you could be comfortable stopping there. Ladies and gentlemen, here's the language of the statute.
My preference would be to explain it and to go a step further.
And can you remind me again what phrase you would recommend be said?
Because that means it was a motivating factor.
A motivating factor. And you found that elsewhere in other jurisdictions with similar statutes?
Yeah, I found a number of other state and federal courts that have addressed this issue either in the context of hate crimes or in criminal cases dealing with criminal convictions for the Fair violations of the Fair Housing Act. Where they've addressed the meaning of because, discriminating because of, the majority of courts. Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. You've mentioned that there's case law from other jurisdictions interpreting the causation. Is there any guidance in the legislative history of our statute that that might support adopting one definition, one causation definition over another?
I don't know, Your Honor. I didn't review the legislative history. Okay. Apologize. Just briefly on the denial of the proposed instruction on the definition of sexual orientation, we would maintain that that instruction properly denied because it was not necessary in this case, that it was sufficient to use the language of a statute, and relatedly, a trial court has no duty to define words of common meaning understanding. And in this case, sexual orientation was of common meaning and understanding, given that we have a straight male calling homosexual males wearing faggot at the time of the assault. As far as Duncan's assertion that sexual orientation needed to be defined in order to ensure that the jury wasn't using it or conflating with something else, such as cross-dressing, we disagree. There was never any suggestion by the state or the court that Duncan could be found guilty based on something else, such as cross-dressing. The state's allegations, its theory of the case, as well as the trial court's instructions, all required discrimination based on sexual orientation. There was no reason for the jury to confuse the two. Submit that no further definition or clarification of sexual orientation was needed, at least not in this case, based on these facts. As far as your question, Justice Castle, is it a statement of the law? We're running out of time. Can I have just a second to address that? I don't know. I'm certainly not NJI on that issue. It's, generally speaking, the dictionary. The proposed instruction that was given is generally the dictionary definition. I don't know if that's even up to speed with respect to where we are in society standards. I know that it's transgender and transsexual stuff has come into the fray, and so I don't know if instruction that just says homosexual, heterosexual, and bisexual is complete or accurate at this point anymore. And I'm certainly not aware of anything that says it's an accurate statement of the law. If there are no further questions, we ask the further judgment of the district.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for a vote? There is no time for rebuttal. We will go on to the next case of the day, which is State v. Adam T.